This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Good evening, and thank you for tuning in to Eco Radio. On tonight's program, we'll hear from some of the opposition on the ground in Tonganoxie about Tyson's efforts to open a plant in Kansas. Plus, we'll hear from the Heartland Tree Alliance about their effort, about their free street tree programs, and the many benefits of trees. But first, I'm naturally with your headline news. EcoWatch.com reports Puerto Rico's humanitarian crisis continued to grow over the weekend as officials described apocalyptic conditions across the island in the wake of Hurricane Maria. Many of the 3.4 million American citizens living on the island are without power and disconnected from communications, and officials estimate some areas won't see power restored for months. Isolated towns and low-income communities are facing increasing shortages of supplies and fuel. Officials estimate the storm also destroyed around 80% of the island's crop value, while the dam compromised by heavy rain is causing worries about flooding and accessibility of drinking water. The Arkansas Plant Board has approved new regulations that prohibit the use of dicamba from April 16th through October 31st, 2018, after receiving nearly 1,000 complaints of pesticide misuse in the state. Arkansas, which temporarily banned the highly volatile weed killer in July, could now face legal action from Monsanto, the developers of dicamba-resistant soybeans or cotton, and the corresponding pesticide, a.k.a. the Xtend crop system. Reuters reports, quote, Monsanto previously submitted a petition asking the board to reject the proposed cutoff date for sprayings and warned the company may file a lawsuit if the board denied the request. If implemented, the deadline could hurt sales of dicamba herbicides and Monsanto seeds resistant to the chemical. The board unanimously denied Monsanto's petition and will work with legal staff to prepare a response, according to a statement. What's happening in Arkansas is just a small slice of what's happening across the country's farm belt. Complaints of dicamba damage have surfaced in 24 states, impacting roughly 3 million acres. San Francisco and Oakland are suing Chevron, ConocoPhillips, ExxonMobil, BP, and Royal Dutch Shell, the five biggest investor-owned fossil fuel producers in the world, over the costs of climate change. San Francisco City Attorney Dennis Herrera and Oakland City Attorney Barbara J. Parker filed separate lawsuits on Tuesday in the Superior Courts of San Francisco and Alameda County on behalf of their respective cities. They seek to hold the companies responsible, quote, for the costs of seawalls and other infrastructure necessary to protect San Francisco and Oakland from ongoing and future consequences of climate change and sea level rise caused by the company's production of massive amounts of fossil fuels, end quote, according to a joint announcement from the attorneys. They claim that the oil and gas giants have known about the link between fossil fuels and climate change for decades, but continue to sell their products anyway, thus creating, quote, an ongoing public nuisance that is causing harm now and in the future risks catastrophic harm to human life and property, including billions of dollars of public and private property in Oakland and San Francisco, end quote. Oil industry representatives called the lawsuits unproductive. ENN.com reports, the final days of August signaled summer's end for those of us in the Northern Hemisphere. So how did this summer compare to others? For the entire globe, both August and the season, July, June, and August, each went down as the third warmest on record. But depending on where you live, the summer you experienced may have felt warmer or cooler than normal. And that's all for my headline news. I'm going to pass it over first to Mr. Richard Mabian.
Thank you, naturally. Hello, everyone. This is me, as she said, Richard Mabian. For those of you who don't know me, that's who I am. And I am one of the normal hosts here on the show. And there is so much going on around the country, on this planet, that if I didn't have such an outstanding show, I could spend my time sitting up here talking about all the different issues that's going on around the country. And for those of you who know me, you know that I use my ability to be on this airwave to address social and racial and ethnic type circumstances that's going on in the country too, good, bad, or endeavor. And it would be remiss for me not to make some comment about the things that's going on in our football games. And I'm a I guess you could call me a social engineer that spends all of their time working in the inner city. And the thing that bothers me is when you have million-dollar darlings proclaiming something to show their disdain, and then when the game's over, go live in their luxury million-dollar homes, but don't understand that they're influencing people who look like them, who live in the midst of hell. And the next thing I know, I wake up in the morning and some nut bucket, for lack of a better word, has found himself dead in the street because they chose to show their First Amendment right in a situation where nobody cares. So all I'm saying, I'd rather pass the hat at the game and have them drop some dollars in it and bring them dollars back here to Kansas City and see if we can't create some kind of economic vehicle that can hire people. Okay, that's all I need to say. I'm sure I got many folks out there that would want to take issue with me and what I'm saying, and that's fine. I mean, this is one of them places where you need a disclaimer. This is not KKFI saying this. This is Richard Mabian saying this. Like I said, I spend my time working in those communities, and I know the effect. They had a thing when I was coming up learning the human behavior that was called cause and effect. We need to remember that, cause and effect. Okay, with that said, I'll bring us all out of the dum-dum and we get back into why we're really here today. I'm really excited with this program. It started when our production manager, Mike Murphy, said to me, you know, we need to do something with that Tyson thing that's going on, man. That is so hot. I mean, to see people out here doing what they doing up there in Tonganoxie is just unbelievable. And so I agree with him 100%. I can't think of a better place for the results or this conversation to occur than our Eco Radio on Monday evening at 6 o'clock. So here we are. And I got some Tonganoxie folks in here. The first thing I did is called our ace. Y'all all know Zach. Zach is here. He's our Sierra Club legislator up in Topeka. I really don't know what he does. He just shows up every now and then and has some things to say. But I called him, got in touch with him, and he hooked it up for us. So, Zach, introduce yourself. Tell him who you brought with you.
Sure. Thanks, Richard, for having me on again. I've been the Sierra Club lobbyist for 6 years. Always a pleasure to be on the radio with you. I was very excited to hear that you wanted to talk about the Tyson chicken processing facility, a slaughterhouse, and its farms that would happen. This issue hits close to home for me. I'm a Tonganoxie graduate, live right outside the city, and so this hit me on a very personal level. Happy to bring along Jarrett Pruitt, who's been working hard and helping lead the effort to educate the public about this.
Jared, do you want to say hello?
Yeah. First of all, just thanks for having us out here. It's great to have a voice. You know, that's something that's really important to us in our community. Yeah, I'm a registered nurse. I've got my family out there. I grew up out in Tonganoxie. And as soon as we heard this announcement, that was a complete surprise and really floored all of us out there. We took to action, and we wanted to have our voice be heard and to make sure we were being represented by our elected officials out there. And so it's been something that's been a hectic and crazy last, 2.5 weeks here. It's turned things upside down in a town, but there's been a very, very, very strong vocal opposition to this plant that was pushed on us.
Okay, before you get going on it. And I'm opening up the lines. Our number here is 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534. If anyone out there would like to call in or have something to say, ask a question, make a comment, you're more than welcome to do so. Because this is what I want you to do, Jared. What is your background? Because, see, I want people to understand that you don't have to be a bona fide rocket scientist to get engaged in community concern. So give us a little idea of, I know you said you were a nurse, but where's your motivation coming from?
Well, I'm definitely not a rocket scientist. I'm a concerned citizen. And I'm somebody that I just got extremely upset, and this all started that I heard the announcement and got things together, researched some information, and went and spoke loudly at our county commission meeting to our representatives there to let them know how I felt about things. And we've had a real organic movement that's happened in the community. A lot of people coming together against this because we felt like we didn't have any say in this process. This was handed to us as almost like a done deal that they were going to be breaking ground in 90 days and slaughtering chickens by 2019, and they hadn't mentioned anything to us in our town at all.
Right.
Okay.
Just a little background, Richard. This is a town around 5,500 people.
Okay.
Okay, outside of Kansas City West there. And, you know, I think what really riled people up is that there was no involvement of the community, no community buy-in in this project until all of a sudden our governor comes in with the Tyson executive and said, this is we're coming, you know, Tonganoxie is the center of our universe right now. And so that just caught a lot of people by surprise.
Well, I think that's what, when we all started finding out about it here. I mean, when I heard he was coming up there and was with the mayor, I guess it was, and they made the announcement and talked about the jobs, that was a reflection back on what they've done with the Amazon plants out in Edgerton, Kansas, and also in Kansas City, Kansas. They showed up, they announced that there's jobs.
Right.
But the circumstances that's involved with those businesses coming in is not mentioned. What I'm still wanting to hear, okay, 5,500 people, gotcha. But y'all showed up in mass.
We did. And it's been beautiful, honestly.
How did you make that connection? Did you shoot up sparklers? Or what made people know to come that way? I mean, what made people? I'm not seeing the meeting where everybody showed up, but what got people engaged in the conversation to start getting ready for that meeting?
You know, like with a lot of things these days, social media was crucial in this, that we had one of our members started a social media page right away to get the word out, to inform people, to have people to let them voice their concerns about this project. And it really just grew from there. We gained a lot of traction inside the area of Tonganoxie. And what we tell people, this isn't just a Tonganoxie problem. This is a Northeast Kansas problem.
Okay.
Because if you look at Tyson's business model, they're going to be putting up chicken barns within a 50-mile radius.
Explain that. So urban people don't know what you're talking about.
sorry. So essentially, they want to be slaughtering 1.25 million chickens a week.
Wow.
And if you realize how high of a number that is ridiculous. And to be able to support that they have to scatter these barns all over the countryside in neighboring counties such as Wyandotte County, Johnson County, Jefferson County, Leavenworth County, even all the way up to Shawnee County, they're going to be trying to spread these things out. And it's a big thing that can really have a huge footprint on the entire area.
If I'm in Wyandotte County and I'm broke, and I got a little piece of land, and my kids are suffering, this might be something that could become an income producer for me, attract my attention?
You know, it
could be.
Okay.
And go ahead and do some research out there.
And look into it. There's a lot of people that are very dissatisfied in the chicken growing industry that have lost their land, that have had lots of problems, that haven't been able to keep things up, and it's ended up ruining their lives.
So there's
two sides to every story. There are people that make money off this and are very happy, but there's a lot of stories that I've heard from people that are not.
Well, the reason I'm bringing it up, I'm playing the devil's advocate here, because I think people need to know that as much as you are doing what you're doing, there are other folks out there that are sitting back in the cut going, hey, I can get me a new car.
Sure. You know, here's how it works. They'll offer you a pretty considerable financial package to install barns on your land.
Okay.
You got 10 acres or more, they'll come in and want to put a 25,000-square-foot building and about four of those barns on your land. Okay, so 25,000 chickens. Those are $200,000 a pop for one of those buildings. They'll extend you some credit to say, hey, we'll give you $1 million in credit and a loan with not very much down. But you just got to grow these chicken for us how we want them. We'll drop them off at your place. You grow them. We'll take all the live ones when you're done, and you'll make a little bit of money. Okay. Well, it sounds okay, but then you owe them a whole bunch of money, and you're their only contract. You're not using those chicken barns for anything else.
Right.
And you're hoping to make it. Well, maybe for the first couple of years, you'll make it financially, some people, and then they'll want some more upgrades to your business. And then so then you're in debt to them, you know, and doing what they say.
I wanted to work through the financial angle first. Yeah. Now, we're environmentalists.
Yeah.
We're concerned about health.
Mm-hmm.
Now, bring me to that. What are we dealing with here?
You know, it's pretty easy to see. Anybody that can punch some Tyson into a search engine will see their track record as far as water pollution goes. From what I've been reported, they're the number two water polluter in the nation and the number one polluter in agribusiness.
Now, is that from something running from their plants into the stream, or is that, like I've heard, it goes from groundwater?
Well, both. I'll give you a prime example, Sedalia, Missouri, you know, right over here. So in Sedalia, Missouri, in 2003, Tyson pled guilty to 20 felony violations and paid a $7.5 million fine because they were bypassing their water plant and dumping straight into the river.
Okay.
They had search warrants served by the EPA twice, and they continued to dump even after these search warrants were served. That's how brazen some of their acts are to produce first and pay fines when it comes to pollution instead of stopping production.
Yeah.
And not standing up for the right thing, you know, paying a penalty or a fine in their grand scheme of business is just part of the cost.
Collateral
they don't
matters.
Care about the environmental concern isn't there. You know, speeding up lines, workplace environment, you know, safety practices. If someone gets hurt, that's a part of the business kind of thing. And so they've had workplace violations too. So, and we don't want to sound anti-business because Tonganoxie is looking for good business.
Right,
we're not just sure that this is the business we want.
Well, yeah, I think that's what everybody's hearing. It's not that you're anti-business. It's the fact that the negative aspects of this particular business outweighs the profit that can be made. I have heard a lot about the bacteria that's associated with the eggs, with the feathers. They said that there's a tremendous amount of bacteria on the feathers, and the feathers just flow free. I saw a picture of a truck coming in with feathers, tons of chickens on it, and it was just leaving a trail of feathers, you know, that's just going to be blowing in people's yards. I heard some people talking about property value. What's that about?
Well, you know, I've got a study right in front of me here, and there's different numbers for different areas that they've looked at, but you tend to see some significant decreases in property value in these areas, especially the closer that you get to the plant, and depending whether it's farmland or residential, those numbers are different. But that's one of the things that we see in Tyson's business practice, that they want to put the financial burden on these chicken farmers. They want to put the financial burden on this community that they're moving into so that they can take all the profits. You know, we're a small town out there. We don't have the infrastructure and resources to deal with an influx of people that could be coming in here. There would need to be road improvements. Our schools would need to be bigger. We had to fight to get a bond issue to build our last school out there. And it was a fight. It had to be restructured and voted on again, and we got that. And we have a beautiful grade school, but we have enough room for small growth in that school. We don't have enough room for a large amount of growth if we have a large influx of people in our community.
Okay. That was one of the issues was I hear people talking about the folks coming in. My question, in the bars where you have your good old Billy Bob, how's Billy Bob and them talking about this?
You know, I can't speak for Billy Bob. I can speak for myself and tell you, you know, I'm open to diversity in our community.
Are you getting any of those conversations?
There probably are some of those conversations. I don't entertain those.
That's what I was concerned, and the reason I'm bringing it up, first of all, like you said, you got 5,500 people, so we're not talking a whole lot of people, and evidently it's all about power. People is power. And it's obviously is working because you had Tyson make a major delay in their thinking of this, and that's why you keep hearing me harp on how did you get those folks all there at the same time, because that's one of the big problems we have here is getting people to show up at a place at the same time like that. And they were all active. I mean, they were in it. I mean, it wasn't like they were sitting there just listening. I mean, there were people who were up and engaged and had comments to make. And I think it's good to see how inclusive is that being with the population, because that's what it's about.
No, the activism in our community here has been nothing short of a miracle.
Okay.
And the way that a lot of people, this isn't a red issue, this isn't a blue issue, this is a community issue that
right.
we've all gotten on board with. And we're lucky to have some advisors that have came in that have helped us with that cause, but this has grown from the ground up right in Tonganoxie, Kansas, and has spread out to other regions in Northeast Kansas.
Okay, so who were the advisors that came in?
You know, like you just, we've got Zach sitting
okay,
here,
okay.
And Zach is a friend from the Sierra Club he's a local guy that's
right.
got a dog in this
fight. I didn't want people to think you had some of them outside. You know, they'll claim you got outside agitators that come into a town to cause. I want to make sure we know it's our local folks.
No,
right.
we've,
coming in.
We've got inside people that are agitated.
Yeah. I'm glad.
Well,
when
you talk about outside agitators, this whole situation, you know, one name comes to mind. You know, and the fact that people's community and livelihoods and the place they live was overnight kind of put at risk there in their own mind, without any of their say.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about that a little bit. Come on, what about this secret meeting stuff going on, man?
That's you know, for some of our leadership and our politicians to answer on that. You know, I can tell you from our perspective, we heard a few whispers in the community the weekend before. Governor Brownback says he's got a big announcement for us on Labor Day. He shows up the next day with a Tyson semi-truck rolling into downtown Tonganoxie, telling us that this is a done deal, they're breaking ground in 90 days, and this is going to be great for us, and we disagree.
Boy, that's unreal. That's unreal. This has been quite a story. I think it showed community.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you always hear people finding needs. Sometimes irrelevant issues that's going on. This may be the beginning of creating community, and it usually fizzles out. But this shows the real American kind of community, what this country was built on. And this is people coming together as people to fight for their right. And I think that it should be admired and it should be recognized. That's why Mike and I were just tickled to death to know we were going to be able to have you. And you're a good spokesperson. I'm still trying to find out where they found you.
Naturally wanted. I know you're going to want to get to like where we sit currently with this, but naturally wanted to ask if you've seen any research about the quality of life for the animals.
You know, that's definitely a concern. I mean, if you look at Tyson's history, the way that they treat their farmers, their animals, their own employees, there are some huge, huge, huge humanitarian concerns there and concerns for the animals that are involved. It's just, I can't speak to that a whole lot, but it's definitely a concern that I've seen from their track record.
From the information I've seen of some of their practices in Western Kentucky, where they had one of their biggest chicken growing areas, they grow these chickens for about 51 days, maybe plus or minus, and there's about a 2% loss in birds from week to week, at least in the first 4 weeks. So if you're talking about 25,000 chickens and losing 2% of them, that just shows kind of what you're dealing with
as far as the animal
welfare there.
And my comment to it would come from my side, to my own personal side, is Craig Vollen, because he's been fighting these chicken problems and these animal problems all over the state of Kansas. And he's made comments about there'll be 250,000 chickens in a daggum pen falling all over each other. They're so deep into it, when they die, they can't get to the ones that are dead to get them out because there's too many chickens for them to get there. And he was talking about the diseases that could be passed along salmonella. smell and all that kind of stuff can happen because of those conditions that they have, those chickens and stepping on top of each other's heads and stuff, you know, and it's just about, it's mass production.
Right.
That's all they do. It's just mass production. Those dates that you gave, 51 days from birth to 51 days, they go on headed towards somebody's table. And I think I saw something where they have machines that pick them up and put them in those crates and put them on the trucks. And it's an unbelievable process.
Right. I heard some of the local community people, when we had these big rallies to hear what people had to say about them, they talked about, this isn't agriculture to us.
No.
You know, this isn't the way we should be growing food for people and giving people jobs.
Right.
To produce food, there's better ways to do this.
Yeah,
this, you know, without the environmental pollution, without the social and humanitarian low wages, that sort of thing. There's better ways to do agriculture.
Better ways to do it. This is agribusiness, and we need to make sure we understand that the difference between the two, and what they're doing is just making money. They're not really that concerned about the welfare of the animals. They're not concerned about the welfare of people. I mean, those people that live out there around that's not their concern. I mean, that's obvious. If you all weren't doing what you're doing, then nobody would be doing it.
And that's what I heard at the beginning. It's like, if this is a good idea, let's at least do a vote in the county about it. Let's let the democratic nature of the process play out, as opposed to just being put on us.
Yeah.
Well, and a platform that our group's had since the beginning, we're a rural community. We are pro-agriculture. We are pro-farm. But a saying that you'll see around town a lot is farms, not factories.
Okay. Well, we're getting close to the time. I'm so glad y'all came in. But I still want to make sure, because it's sounding like our inner city problem. And luckily right now you all are being hit with it, because our folks have to weigh between the job and health. You know, what is of more concern? I mean, if your kids aren't laying down on the ground kicking, you thinking about them growing up being able to make an income. So it really makes it tough for environmental folks inside the inner city, because you have to deal with those two fractions. At least right now you all are doing it. You got a rural environment and you got that kind of mentality where people aren't putting wealth above health, and I think that's very important. I'm going to let you, got a couple of minutes here. Give me some kind of closing statement so we can memorize you into the archives.
Well, so first of all, I'll let you know our group on that you can find us on Facebook. You can look up Notongi and Tyson as a Facebook group. We have a Facebook page, which is the Citizens Against Project Sunset. Project Sunset is the cutesy little nickname that they gave this project when they were planning it in the shadows. And so, you know, speak up, join in with us. This is a problem that's going to affect Kansas City. The water that's sourced from our area goes straight down the river to Johnson County, where their drinking water comes from, and this is something that's going to impact everybody, so we would love to have all the support that we can get from the area.
Okay.
Just last thing, I know other towns in Kansas are considering, you know, as we're saying, hey, no Tyson and Tongi, but other communities across Kansas and other states are considering this. That this might be something for their area. I just caution people to really get the facts and really consider themselves, would they want this for themselves or their neighbors or their community? The fact that we don't have any odor regulations, people living with odor, these type of low wage jobs, and then also this type of agriculture. So is the juice worth the squeeze on the environment and social implications? I would say no, so just caution.
Well, you know my theme song is, you got to fight for the right to party. So y'all doing it up there. Y'all doing it real well up there in Tonganoxie. Thank you all for coming in, and we'll have you back. Make sure if there's something goes on that you think we need to talk about, get in touch with me. If not, if we hear something, we're going to get in touch with you. It's very nice meeting you, Jared. Got to keep my eye on you up there in Tonganoxie.
It's nice to meet you, and thanks for having us out tonight. We appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Thank you. We're going to take a break here, folks. We'll be right with you in a minute. Thank you.
Just a quick programming note along these same lines. There's a program on conscious eating with Matt Menger on the opening of the All Souls Forum. That will be Wednesday at 6 p.m., so do check that out. Here's some other things coming up on your community radio station.
On the next Radioactive Magazine, award-winning journalist and Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez We'll discuss how the election of progressive mayors around the country and around the world is creating a progressive force that can serve as an antidote to the destructive policies of Donald Trump. That's Radioactive Magazine, Tuesday at 6 p.m.
It's officially fall, and All Souls Forum is back with another season of interesting speakers and timely topics. This week, Matt Menger will discuss conscious eating and how food choices affect our health, the environment, and even reflect our commitment to social justice. Join me this Wednesday evening at 6 p.m. here on 90.1 FM KKFI.
Award-winning journalist and Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez is coming to Kansas City for a KKFI benefit. His talk will range from sanctuary cities to climate change and how social movements are fueling an urban political renewal. Friday, September 29th, 7:30 p.m. at All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church, 4501 Walnut. Tickets are $20 with a low-income or student option for $10. Or meet Juan at a VIP dinner at 6 o'clock and get his new book, Reclaiming Gotham. Dinner, book, and talk, $75. For tickets, go to kkfi.org/events.
For 30 years, KKFI has been supported by listeners just like you. Thank you for being there for us so we can be there for you. To help sustain independent community radio, go to kkfi.org and click donate.
All right, I'm back. That was quite a show, y'all. I really enjoyed it. Anytime we folks here in the industry have a chance to talk to folks that are taking up on their own to represent. You gotta admire that. We need more of it. Like I said, this is not about being anti-business, but this is about looking out for the welfare of your community and the people you serve. You know, that's my word, the people you serve. That's what we're here for. All right, now we're moving into the second part of our show, and naturally, it's gonna be one of the interviewees.
That's right.
So what I will do is have you give us the intro and introduce this young man you have here with you.
Okay, thank you, Richard. This is naturally, as he said, and I'm glad to be here. So I have with me, his name is Matt Vandermolen, and he works for the Heartland Tree Alliance. How long have you been there, Matt?
I have been there for 1 year.
Okay, naturally. 1 year. But we had you on a year ago.
That's right.
So you had just started.
Okay, so what is the Heartland Tree Alliance?
In four words, Richard, it's healthy trees for healthy people.
Was that four words?
Five words. So,
yeah. We're just seeing if you're paying attention.
You only been there a year, if we understand.
Maybe next year. Ask me again next year.
So what do you do?
We right now are working with a program for street trees in Kansas City, Missouri. So trees going in the right-of-way. Any resident who's interested, who lives in Kansas City, Missouri, can get a free street tree along with all the benefits.
All right. Street tree.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me just a second. I'm going to pass out this number again because if you anything like me, you might have also thought street tree. 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534. That's our number here. So what is a street tree?
Street tree is a tree that's planted in the right-of-way easement.
So it's not a brand of tree. This is a location.
Location of tree.
Okay, mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So now you're talking about the right-of-way of the easements, right?
Mm-hmm.
How much of what you are doing has to do with the overflow problem we have in Kansas City?
The sewer overflow? Well, trees, that is one of the benefits of trees.
Well, that's what the trees are being planted in our right-of-ways and our green lands are for, mm-hmm. is to help with the overflow circumstance. But I'm saying, is that a feature of what you all are doing, or is that just happen to be a benefactor of what you all are doing?
It's a feature and a benefactor.
Okay.
So if you look at the benefits of one tree, that's pretty big, about 15 inches in diameter.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking like 60 to 70 feet tall. About a third of the benefits of that tree come in savings to the city in stormwater reduction.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So the tree is able to intercept that rainwater and any runoff coming from any residential.
Okay.
And it does it in a couple ways, Richard.
Give me those dimensions.
I just want to tell you something. Since I've been working with him, I've just learned so much just in these last few months. And it's exciting because I'm new to the game, you know, and then I can tell the residents who we plant for, you know. So like you said earlier in the show, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to be involved. Yeah. So the trees actually slow down the rain right from the top because the leaves, when it hits the leaves, it slows it down, you know, so we don't get the overflowing and the rushing. And then, of course, the roots, and it's sucking up the water from the
right.
So it stops it in two ways.
It's two ways. Now, well, I'm going to go back here to those dimensions you gave. You went to the full-grown tree, right? Because that's like the end results there, where we're trying to go. And you said it could be how big? What's the dimensions?
Oh, he's just 15-inch diameter trunk. Which isn't even...
Well, and that's pretty nice. That's pretty nice.
That's pretty nice size tree for an urban tree.
Tree. That's pretty good. That's why I was asking. And so, in the easements where you're planting them, are they in the open fields or are they along sidewalks?
They are along sidewalks. In fact, most of the trees that we plant are in between the curb and the sidewalk.
Okay.
Now we have to be pretty careful about what kinds of trees we plant in those spaces.
That's where I was coming next.
So when we have to have at least 5 feet between the curb and the sidewalk before we can plant a tree. And that when we plant a tree in that space, it's going to be a smaller tree.
Right.
So one that only gets to be 20 to 30 feet tall when it's mature. It's not going to get any taller than that.
Right. Hey, and Matt, with that explanation, let's take it way back to 2002 when HTA started and the slogan. Tell me about the slogan and what that means and how that translates into the work that you're talking about that we do today.
The slogan is right tree for right place. Right. So that was started after this big ice storm when there was a need for better tree plantings in the Kansas City metro area.
Okay.
Because the ice storm knocked all the trees out. You remember that, Richard?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that. But I also remember the trees down there on Truce around. Let's see, you got, what's that?
Mannheim.
Yes,
yeah, the Mannheim
district. And they were having problems because, one, the trees had got so big, they were breaking the side. They had got so sidewall. And they had a big fight because they wanted the city wanted to cut them down. And
well, they did. They cut down 80 trees at least.
Oh, man. Yes.
It was with Green Impact. With Green Impact Zone money.
Yes.
Right? Yeah, it was money for that was designated to bring environmental jobs into that neighborhood.
And what did they do? They just came in quick, chop it up.
The neighbors fought it. I mean, that's how we know about it. Because Franny, she was on it. Yeah. She was on Franny Knight, she was on it. And then the deal was.
And Lady D.
Yeah, and Lady D. And then what they were doing was using those trees that had grown up and broke the sidewalk as excuses
for
coming in to cut them down. And they went around that whole street. Down there in Mannheim District, man, and that's why I asked you that question,
right?
To see, because when you said that dynamic of them, I wanted to make sure they wasn't going to be the, you know, 30 years you know, we got that same problem.
But you just brought up like so many issues with that, though. That wasn't just right tree, right place. So that's important. I mean, to talk about Mannheim, both Matt and I toured Mannheim. Well, we didn't tour. We go door to door. This is how the program works.
Yeah.
We use the internet first. We use Parcel Viewer and the maps, and we look at these neighborhoods. We see just from the satellite view, like if there's any open areas where trees could be planted. Okay, because we're trying to increase the urban forest. Then we kind of get a vague area in mind, and then we hit the streets and we go door to door.
And go to neighborhood meetings.
We go to neighborhood meetings. We don't just bust up in your neighborhood. We go to the neighborhood meetings first. And so I'll let him explain the process a little more. But since we're talking about Mannheim, we canvassed Mannheim with both the president, Diane Charity, and then Bill Drummond, who I don't know what his title is over there, but he's highly involved in the neighborhood.
He's been on the show. He was on the show talking about this.
Yeah. So he told us
part
this
of
story.
The Emerald City. Yeah.
He told us the story as we were walking around. He's like, because there was part of the sidewalks that had been cut in to go around trees that were there, because the rest, like you said, they were just coming in and tearing down trees, and then And they were like, the neighbors put up a fight. All they had to do was cut the sidewalk in to go around the tree.
Yeah,
to be able to keep the trees.
We don't have those kind of people where they follow orders. They follow scripts.
Well, and it was an outside company that they brought in to do all that. You know, they
which is again totally antithetical to the whole point of the green impact.
Yeah.
You gotta watch people in power. Period. Yeah. And that was an alliteration. You gotta watch people in power. And make sure
you should say perceive people in power.
Perceive people in power. Period.
Yeah.
Period. For real.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
so
we want to prevent
this
from happening in
there
the future.
It is. Bring it back.
So we want to plant trees that are not going to get too big to break up the sidewalk.
Right.
But when we have a big space, we're going to plant a bigger tree to get those big benefits for a neighborhood.
Right.
Okay. I'm under the assumption your generation, and I'm here with a couple of young folks, y'all. They might be somewhere around millennials. I don't know, but they're down in there. We have this concern that your generation understands that we as a community need you to educate our future generations. So is there anything that you all are doing that is going to be a benefit to our future generations?
Yes, absolutely. Matt can tell you all about it.
Well, so what we were talking about earlier is just one program that we do within the Heartland Tree Alliance. What were we doing today, Aaron? Where were we?
Today, well, let me preface this by saying that every single program that we do at the Heartland Tree Alliance has the educational factor to it. That's how one of the reasons that differs us from a contractor is that everything we do has an educational component, so we can leave that legacy.
Okay.
But today we were out at Highlands Elementary over on the Kansas side, because we work on both sides. And we were planting trees. And it was educational all around, not just at the school ground, but we had the volunteers come in and dig into the ground, right? And then we had the kids come out and the kids plant the trees. But you think, oh, to plant a tree, you dig a hole and you put a tree in. But there are all these little details that we have to pay attention to ensure that the tree will become that 30, 40, 50, or 60-foot tall tree. Do you want to talk some more about it?
So for every work that we do a pretty in-depth planting demonstration at the start of that. We also have a program called Tree Keepers, which is a pretty long course. Natural E's in it right now, learning lots of stuff about how you plant a tree, what kind of benefits you're going to get as a homeowner, as a landowner, as a resident in a city from these trees, how to prune them, how to take care of them, what are the danger signs you're looking for.
Right.
Is this tree going to fall on me? Do I need to get it taken care of? Do I need to call an arborist? What is this tree that's in my front lawn? How do I identify it and understand what kind of things it's given me as a community member, as a dad?
So how big are the trees when you plant them?
They're taller than I am.
That's what I'm saying.
About
6'4". About 6'. So they're around.
So they're 7 to 8 feet tall. Mm-hmm. They're in containers.
Okay.
They're 1-inch caliper. That means
about
1 inch in diameter.
Okay.
When we plant them,
they got the root thing on the bottom.
They do.
Do you plant the whole deal, or do you take it off? In other words, it's like if it was a good, old days, they had gunny sacks. You just set them down in the ground. Y'all probably got some mechanized
they
thing
have those
now.
They still have the gunny sacks.
So do you set the whole
ball
thing
burlap,
down, or do you take it off?
We take – it's in a container.
Okay.
Plastic.
It's in a plastic container. So we take the whole root ball out. It's a different method than the ball and burlap you're mentioning. It's also different than the bare root seedlings, which is another common way of planting city trees.
Okay.
But this is in a container. So it's – all the roots are contained in this plastic container. We take them out. We have to work on those roots quite a bit because there's a lot of girdling roots, a root that hit the sidewall. The container is now circling around the tree. And if we plant the tree with that root, it's going to keep circling and girdle the tree.
Okay. It's on.
It's not. The roots aren't going to be able to go out.
Girdle is what?
Choking.
It's going around
and
kind of choking it.
Choking it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we gotta work on that root ball before we plant, which is one of the steps that
you will
naturally
learn if you come volunteer with us.
Talking to the kids about
it. Right, that's really interesting, the conversation of what you're talking about doing. I really like that. I like the way you explained it. I got a scenario here for you. Tell me what you think. I got a farmer that has 8 acres of farm that he has turned into a tree thing. He grows trees. He got peach trees, orchards, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And every spring, he goes out and he digs up the seedlings, the small little trees, and he plants it in a spot on his farm for them to grow this year. Then at the end of the year, he replants them. Well, when it's time to transplant, he transplants them to a new section of his farm. He's not growing food now, so he's turning his farm into an orchard. I mean, he gives harvesters something like 18,000 to 20,000 pounds of fruit every year, you know. Well, he has this long-range desire to have every elementary kid in school plant a tree, his own personal tree. He wanted them to plant them on Quindaro Boulevard, and he said they need to plant them about 20 feet apart. Is that doable?
Depends on the type of tree.
He's
right?
talking. He's so talking spacing, fruit. He's talking fruit trees. Because he's saying if a person was hungry, you know, they could go out there and get them a bag full of peaches and sit out on the curb and eat them over hitting somebody in the head for a hamburger. So that's just a way of saying it. But basically what he's saying is we're dealing with situations where, one, there's two objectives. One, so people, if they're hungry, they can go eat. But the other one, our inner city kids don't have a visual opportunity to see an evolution process.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they planted those trees when they were in elementary school and those trees would grow till they graduated from school, you know, mm-hmm. that's 5-6 years. That'd be a nice size tree.
Mm-hmm.
And that would give them that evolution thing because our kids are leaving and mm-hmm. coming up without having it. So that's just something that's, do you think that's doable?
Yeah.
Does that sound like it would make sense? Y'all better watch it because my next thing is going to be trying to figure out how to get y'all over
there.
Well,
I mean, like Matt says, just depends on location and tree type. And
yeah.
Well,
who's going to be watering the tree?
I know we just have a couple minutes left, and you guys brought some clips, so I don't know if you wanted to play these or...
What do you think, Matt?
Or one of them or
yeah,
not, but
I mean,
it's up to you, but there's only like, you know, 3 minutes left.
Well,
I'd like
to talk about some of the upcoming work days that we have. We're going to be planting, starting our neighborhood plantings in October, and we'll be having our work days on Saturdays from 9 a.m. to noon, and you can find all of that information if you visit bridgingthegap.org. Matt, do you want to tell them about the first work day that we have coming up?
Sure. So we got a lot of neighborhoods on our roster for this fall. The first one is Countryside South Plaza. Mm-hmm. So if you live in that area, you want to learn about how to plant a tree. If you want to plant the trees yourselves and see them grow, it's a great opportunity to do that. And that's going to be on the 7th of October from 9 to noon.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of other neighborhoods. Every Saturday, pretty much from the beginning of October to the beginning of December, we're planting trees.
What time of day do you start?
It's always 9 to noon.
On Saturday morning. So if you work, it's plenty of time to come out with us on Saturday morning. We're also going to plant a lot of trees in neighborhoods like Vineyard, Seven Oaks, Palestine, Indian Mound, Marlboro, Waldo and Tower Homes, and Country Club, Warnall Homestead, and Greenway Fields.
Mm-hmm. So y'all gonna be pretty
busy.
We're
all over the place.
Yeah.
So if you haven't heard from us or seen us in your neighborhood, or maybe you're not involved with your neighborhood association, and so you don't have this information, go to bridgingthegap.org and find the Heartland Tree Alliance program on that website, and you can email us. We want to plant trees because why, Matt? What are the benefits of having increasing the urban forest? We didn't even get into that.
Well, let's talk about health. Yeah. First of all, trees do a great job of providing oxygen mm-hmm. for the folks that live around it, cleaning the air of particulates and pollution. They can increase your property values. They decrease that storm runoff, which saves the city a lot of money. They infrastructure lasts a lot longer with shade mm-hmm. on the streets and the sidewalk. And they can save you a lot of energy, right? So if you get in shade on your home, especially in the summertime, you can save a lot of...
It's like 10 running air conditioning?
Mm-hmm. One tree is equal to 10 window air conditioning units running 20 hours a day.
Wow.
It's huge.
I could attest to that. I live in that kind of a neighborhood over in Kansas. And, of course, my missus had to teach me that. But, you know, I'm serious. There's so much shaded area around there that you can see it in your during the summer with the heat. It's not even a factor because the trees are keeping sage, keep so much shade around us. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. So it does make
a
difference.
And the trees we plant, it's a $400 value at least per tree. So, you know, but we're doing it. It's a free program.
It's a city program.
Okay, so now we get ready to run out of time, and I want to make sure we get this straight. What can we do here at the station to help promote what you all are doing on during this period of your planning? Do we put something on the website to make people? If you want to get in contact with them, you can do
I would
it
just say,
somewhere.
I want to send everybody to bridgingthegap.org, and then maybe I can get with Mike, and we can record a little promo that can play.
You can play out for it, okay.
Yeah.
All right, that'll work.
All right. Well, I'm going to just go ahead and keep it on.
I'm going to say thank you for coming in and sharing this with us. I'm sure it would be a benefit, and naturally, we let you just pick right on up on your part of it.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Matt. I got a couple events for you on September 26th. Tomorrow from 6 in the morning to 9 in the morning, you can meet Sarah Dykeman, a bicyclist who is following the Monarch migration from Mexico to Canada. She'll be in Kansas City to talk about her year-long adventure tomorrow from 7 to 9 on her Butter Bike Expedition at the Anita B. Gorman Conservation Discovery Center, 4750 Troost. Okay, so they have two different times on here. But it is at the Anita B. Gorman Conservation Center from 6 p.m., starting at 6 p.m. with the social hour. So go to their website, the Anita B. Gorman Discovery Center. Go to their website and check out all the details about this. But the goal of the Butter Bike Expedition is to connect people to the Monarch migration and encourage everyone on the Monarch route to provide habitat for the annual visitors. Let's see here. The advisory committee to the Carolyn Benton Cook Fair Chair and the Continuing Education at UMKC in partnership with the Land Institute welcomes Bill McKibben, author and environmentalist, on Friday, October 6th. They'll have a short reception with light refreshments, and it'll start at 6 p.m. at the Pearson Auditorium. The program begins at 6:30 p.m. Bill McKibben is the founder of the grassroots climate campaign 350.org and is the Schumann Distinguished Professor in Residence at Middlebury College in Vermont. He's a 2014 recipient of the Right Livelihood Prize, sometimes called the Alternative Nobel Prize. But he'll be speaking at UMKC. It's a free event, as they always have some great speakers come in. Friday, October 6th, 6 p.m. It's free, but you do have to go through their central ticket office to get tickets, and the seating is limited, so make sure you check that out as soon as possible. Is that it? All right, Mike. Thank you.
The mayor of San Juan pleads, "Don't forget us." That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report about water. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin. And it's This Week in Water.
Hurricane Maria hit parts of the Caribbean last week, leaving the area devastated, including the island nation of Dominica and the U.S. territories of Puerto Rico and St. Croix. It was the biggest storm to hit Puerto Rico in 80 years.
Both Puerto Rico and St. Croix had been relatively spared by Hurricane Irma, but Maria was not as forgiving. Rescue and recovery could take months, and returning to normal up to a year.
On Saturday, the island's main port opened, according to the Associated Press, allowing 11 ships to dock loaded with food, water, generators, and cots.
But the humanitarian crisis is growing. Brian Perry, a medical relief worker in San Juan, helping to get hospitals up and functioning, spoke with H2O Radio via Skype on Saturday night.
Healthcare is definitely going to become more of an issue as time goes on and resources get stretched, and whether hospitals are able to open back up and become functional. Because a lot of them, their roofs blew off and water just started pouring down through all the floors of some of these hospitals. And once you get water going from floor to floor, you get mold immediately.
Perry said that situation can lead to respiratory problems, and sick people can't be in hospitals with mold.
Another problem is the huge amount of standing water.
The mosquitoes that were here last week were all blown away by the hurricane, but within a week or two, the mosquitoes are going to be just incredible with all the standing water and inability to control them.
According to the Washington Post, on Saturday, the mayors of 50 cities and towns met in San Juan and pleaded with the governor for the things they need the most: water, drugs, gasoline, satellite phones, and oxygen tanks.
San Juan Mayor Carmen Yulín Cruz told the paper that she would ask not only for Puerto Rico, but for the whole Caribbean, do not forget us and do not let us feel alone.
Before Maria ravaged the Caribbean, two typhoons struck Vietnam, the Philippines, and Japan. Typhoon Talim hit Japan, killing at least two and injuring 40. 640,000 people had been evacuated in areas of Japan before the storm hit.
And another typhoon made a direct hit on Vietnam. It was the most powerful storm to hit the nation of 93 million in 10 years. It caused widespread damage to farmlands, homes, roads, and electrical facilities. 9 people were killed, but it would have been much worse if the mandatory evacuation orders had not been followed.
When we consider the horrible devastation of the earthquake that struck Mexico City last week, we don't usually think of water or lakes, but we certainly could.
The 7.1 magnitude earthquake that killed hundreds occurred, coincidentally, on the same exact day that an even more devastating quake hit in 1985.
The recent quake has drawn attention to the geology of Mexico City. It sits on top of an ancient lake bed surrounded by hills that make it similar to a bowl filled with jello. How this came to be has a deep history.
In the 14th century, the Aztecs built the city of Tenochtitlan on an island in the middle of a lake. It was an important religious center, and they kept the lake from flooding the city by using a system of dikes, levees, and canals.
About 200 years later, Hernan Cortes, the Spanish conquistador, conquered the city and eventually the Aztec Empire. Instead of using the Aztec water improvements, the Spaniards decided to drain the lake.
Mexico City has extracted water from underground more than twice as fast as it's replenished, leaving a spongy clay.
When a quake strikes, the vibrations are trapped in the bowl, which can strengthen them. It's almost like a bathtub, Susan Huff of the USGS told the Smithsonian, with underground waves sloshing back and forth.
When an earthquake strikes near Mexico City, like last week's, it's actually amplified by the ancient sediments that underlie the city. It wasn't until the quake of 1985 that scientists discovered the reverberations under Mexico City were 5 times greater than the waves outside.
After Flint, Michigan's water source was switched from the Detroit system to the Flint River, lead contamination resulted in a human catastrophe. Now the extent of that crisis is even more serious. The lead pollution resulted in fewer babies being born and more fetuses dying.
A new study by researchers at Kansas University and West Virginia University shows that the fertility rate of Flint women dropped 12% and the fetal death rate increased almost 60% after officials switched the source of the city's water.
The researchers also found that birth weights of live babies were on average about 5% lower compared with other Michigan children.
The Detroit Free Press reports that, according to federal health officials, lead can damage a developing baby's nervous system, causing miscarriages and stillbirths, as well as infertility in men and women.
Criminal cases are proceeding against 15 state and local officials for their conduct during the Flint water crisis.
And finally, if you're a rising track star, your dream would be to run as fast as Olympian Usain Bolt. So what's his secret to lightning speed? Gatorade, or so the company would like to have you think.
In their free mobile app called Bolt, players help refuel a cartoon version of the famed gold medalist as he runs a long, difficult race. The sprinter picks up speed when he hits Gatorade icons, but slows down when he runs into water droplets. Players are encouraged to, quote, keep your performance high and avoid water.
That statement got the company in hot water with California Attorney General Javier Becerra, who accused the popular beverage maker of false advertising that could lead children to make bad nutritional choices.
Becerra said in his complaint that making misleading statements is a violation of California law, but making misleading statements aimed at children is beyond unlawful. It's morally wrong and a betrayal of trust.
In keeping with the speed of the fastest human on earth, Gatorade quickly pulled the game and rapidly reached a settlement without admitting wrongdoing. It also agreed to pay $300,000 and promised to stop bad-mouthing water.
That's it for This Week in Water. We'll see you next time.
This Week in Water is supported by the American Water Works Association. Water quality experts will present the latest science and research in the field at WQTC in Portland, November 12th through 16th. Learn more at awwa.org/WQTC.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.